Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. This week, I get to chat with one of my very favorite people, and that's Larry Wingate, also known as the Pitbull of Personal Development. For those of you who don't know Larry from reading his 5 New York Times bestsellers or from seeing him wax eloquent on shows like Fox with Neil Cavuto and Jerry Willis or on CNN with Larry King and many other news outlets, then you really don't need an introduction. If you're not yet familiar with Larry Yelp, though, you're in for a treat. You can find him on his website at LarryWingate.com, Larry Wingate, W-I-N-G-E-T is his last name, and visit with him on Facebook. So that's a short and sweet introduction. Good morning, Larry, and welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I always love to chat with you. And like I was telling you earlier, one of the things that you talk about so much in your books is customer service. And right now I could eat the shingles off my roof. I'm so mad. So we're going to talk about customer service at some point. But you have been on the news a good bit talking about just all the different things that are going on in the world. So before I dive in and start picking your brain about customer service, tell me what's going on with you and you know, what are the big topics that you're talking about?
Oh, lots of big topics right now. Of course, the economy is always at the top of the list. People want to know still how to handle a tough economy and how to survive in recessionary times. And housing is still a big issue. How do I get money and how do I buy a house? Because some people actually do have money right now, and it's a great time to buy if you can still get a loan and so forth. So those are always the big issues. Credit is still a big issue. Credit card debt, all those things, and the new laws and so forth surrounding credit card debt and reporting and your score and all that. In the other areas, though, other than finance, there's a lot going on in the world today.
I know.
I've always got an opinion about what's going on, so it's not too hard for me. So
I know. Well, one thing I would like, and you touched on a topic that I have been kind of wondering about myself, with all of the foreclosures, because I have a lot of people that I know, either I know them directly or indirectly, but it seems like people are trying to short sell their houses and a lot of different things are going on. Larry, how is that going to affect credit scores down the road? Are they going to have to move that criteria around to make allowances?
Well, they're going to make some allowances in the future. I just read an article yesterday about that people who have perfect score in every single area, other than the fact that they had to short sell a home, they will be looked at differently in the future in terms of car loans and other kinds of credit, simply because we've had so much go on in the last 2 or 3 years that they're just going to have to look at the criteria a little differently. It doesn't mean that you're going to have good credit for 7 years, but it means that the credit criteria will open up slightly for people who have had just that one hit on their credit just simply because of circumstances.
Right. I was hoping that was the case because, oh, my goodness. I mean, that's going to penalize so many people. They won't even be able to rent an apartment.
Well, I think that as long as there are people who have apartments for rent, they're going to be willing to take people's money.
I think so, too. Well, tell me what's important to you right now. What is the biggest topic that people are asking you about? And what advice can you give people right now that is near and dear to your heart?
You know, I still get hundreds of emails every month asking all kinds of questions. But pretty much what they all boil down to is, with all the information that's out there, what do I do? And I think right now we're in information overload. when it comes to finance, we see people reacting too much to the information they get. And what I tell people is, you know, and while I appear on the news a couple of times a week, maybe you ought to turn off the news. Don't react so emotionally. We have people reacting emotionally to what's going on in the market, for instance, the stock market. They, you know, the president can give a speech and the market will dip or the market will jump. And then people will try to react to that and second-guess the market or try to handle their finances based on what Bernanke says today or with the fact that Osama bin Laden gets killed and, you know, the stock market jumps. And so people are reacting emotionally to something that has no emotion attached to it. Money is money. Facts are facts. It is black and white, and it reacts emotionally because people react emotionally. The same thing with all the other things that are going on in the news. I just tell people they need more of a buffer so because they're getting too much information, they're responding with too much emotion instead of logic. Go back to the very basics in every single area. What makes the most sense when it comes to your money? Spending less money than you have, having a plan for savings, a plan for investing, and only buying what you can truly afford and can't live without right now. What makes the most sense in business? You go back to the basics. Serve your customers well, which you're going to talk about in customer service. Keep selling, marketing, get better at who you are and what you do. Live as and run your business in as lean a fashion as you possibly can to cut out the fat and get back to the basics of who you really need. Have high expectations over your employees and make sure they really work. Don't be afraid to fire people who aren't working. Don't be afraid to reward people who are working. So some of those basics in business, those things still apply. But I see so much fear and so much emotion right now that people want to try to second-guess what's going on, try to come up with a new way. You see a lot of people, especially during recessionary times, responding to MLM programs and get rich quick, and I'll spend $99 and go become a life coach, and I'll get rich, and all these different get-rich schemes that are out there. And they're really taking advantage of people's, not intelligence, but emotions. So I warn people just to take a deep breath, chill out a little bit, calm down, and do what makes sense on paper.
Right, and I see that, listen, there are marketers out there, particularly online, and I don't watch a whole lot of TV. I took your advice without knowing I was taking your advice, and I shut the TV down about 2 months ago. I could not stand to see one more union guy yelling and screaming or one other person being blown up in a sandy country. I couldn't take it. And it seemed like that's all we were seeing was people yelling, screaming, rioting, and just really behaving badly in many, many ways. And I'm done. So I literally have not watched the news in probably about 2 months. So, but on the rare occasion that I do turn on the TV, I'll see commercials that make me just go, what? Are you kidding me? These marketers are just, they should be ashamed of themselves. They really should.
Well,
but
you know, it's been around forever.
Not.
It's been around since the Old West days. You always had snake oil salesmen promising that their products would do things that just didn't make sense they would do. And that works when people are running scared.
Right.
And it's sort of, I reminded some people the other day that were talking about this, and you know, my logic doesn't always match some of the logic that the suits have when I'm on these television panels and so forth. But I said, you know, it's kind of like handling a snake. You know, if you pick up a rattlesnake and it bites you, is it really the snake's fault? Maybe you shouldn't have picked up the rattlesnake. And which means people need to take personal responsibility for how they respond to this stuff. These people, scammers have been around forever. And you reach the point where you just can't blame the scammers. You have to use some common sense and get your brain involved in these things. And just like you said, say, are you kidding me?
Mm-hmm.
This guy wrote me the other day, told me this long scam, and he said, you know, Larry, it sounds too good to be true. What should I do? And I said, okay, you just answered your own question. Now you're being stupid. Go follow your gut and go away. Don't ask me when you've already said it sounds too good to be true. It is.
Right. And, you know, and we're seeing more and more of that. And unfortunately, people will spend what little money they still have and then get disappointed, and it's kind of a round robin. Common sense is really what is so lacking when you're emotional. And we all know that. You get emotional, common sense just takes a left and goes out the door. It doesn't stick around.
Rarely are decisions made when you're in a panic mode going to end up long-term to be a good decision.
Exactly. Do people just take a breath? Do they stand back, take a deep breath, walk away from it for 24 hours, and just let common sense kind of creep back in the door? What do you suggest they do?
Well, if you just completely walk away for a while, it can put it in perspective. You know, sometimes, and salespeople, they understand that if I get the emotion high and the adrenaline high, and, you know, people in the personal development industry have been doing that for years. Put a bunch of people in a room, beat them to death for 12 hours, wear them completely down, get them tired physically and emotionally and so forth, and then sell them a $10,000 package on how they can change their life. But that's how it's done. And so walking away just to give yourself a breath is an excellent idea. However, I'm still old-fashioned. I'm a big believer in the pencil and paper. I think you get out the pencil and paper and do the plus and minus thing. And you work it out in black and white. Stop working from thought. Stop working from emotion and start working from documentation.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, another thing that I've done all of my life is I stop and I look at it. And I think, Larry, this is where a lot of people make a lot of problem. They put the math to it first. Oh, I can go do this, and, you know, I can get 100 clients at $97 a month, and I can, oh, this is going to really work, and they get all breathless. They don't even stop to think, can I really do this? Is this my passion? Am I serving my clients? Is this really what I want to be known for? And I think if people will stop and take that breath and say, is this really what I want to do, and is this really something that will serve me and other people well, and stop putting the numbers to it, because the numbers aren't going to work anyway.
It's got to feel right.
It has to, yeah.
A few years ago, when I was real hot on the personal finance trail, following up on my A&E show and so forth, I got an offer to do an infomercial by some people who had done some very successful infomercials for a couple of other people. But it would have made me a lot of money. And I talked to my agents, and I talked to my manager, and went through all the stuff to work the numbers, and the numbers were there. I mean, I really could have sold $5 million worth of books in no time. That was their track record. It could have been done. Mm-hmm. And what everybody pointed out, what I knew in my gut, was I didn't want the reputation for doing that, because the people they had worked with and represented were just a little smarmy. And so while the numbers were there, that I could have made a ton of money for doing that, long term, I didn't want to be known as one of those guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're talking about here is exactly that. You've got to think sometimes past the numbers and get down to, how is this going to feel? There are a lot of joint venture things going on out there in my industry where I could partner up and do all this stuff, but I've walked away from every single one of those opportunities simply because they didn't feel like they were consistent with my brand, with my value system, and that's what it comes down to sometimes, especially in hard economic times, because we are so susceptible to just the numbers and just the emotions and that opportunity that may not be there tomorrow, and they're quick to stress that. This is a one-time opportunity. It will pass you by. No, it won't. It'll still be there, I promise. The key is you have to make sure that what you're doing fits your brand, fits your business, fits where you are in your value system. So down the road, while you may have made the money, you didn't sell your soul to the devil along the way.
Right. And one thing about those, you know, this offer expires at midnight tonight, just for the fun of it, because I'm a tech geek, I will bookmark those things. And it has the little clock, and it's counting down. And I'll bookmark it, and I'll go back 7 days later, and it's saying the same thing. It's just an out-and-out lie. You know, it is. They're trying to get you to just do it now, take action now, and yeah, then you're going to have buyer's remorse, and you're going to have an empty bank account, so be careful.
Yeah.
And just take a breath, walk away from it for a short bit. But
just ask yourself the question, if what they're saying is really true, why isn't everybody doing it? Why are they having to sell me so hard?
Yeah.
If it were that easy to get rich, that easy to get a million new clients. I got an offer like that the other day. Larry, I can put a million people in your database that will receive your emails, and it will only cost you $300. And I said, sir, you're just full of crap. That's not true. And he said, well, how dare you say this? I said, give me one guy you put $1 million on, a million people on their mailing list. Well, this is how it works. I said, no, I need a name. I want to call somebody. You can't put a million people on my mailing list for $300, because if you could, you'd be the richest guy in the world at $300 a pop. It can't be done. Other people aren't doing it. So ask yourself, if this all is so good and all this is true, how come everybody isn't doing it? Why are they having to sell it so hard? Just be careful.
And not only that, if he were to put a million people into your database, you'd be shut down.
Well,
because
sure, I can handle that.
Whoever your newsletter service, well, not only that, but whoever's handling your newsletter service, they would flag your account, understand that it is spam and that you're trying to spam people, and you just lose everything that you had to start with. So there are ways.
Yeah, I'd rather build up 100 people every 2 or 3 days. It makes more sense to me.
Well, it does, and they're qualified traffic. They want to hear from you. They are looking for information from you.
Yep.
You know, it's that whole know, like, and trust notion that is so important. You know, a million people, well, oh, goody. Some of them can be in France and may not speak your language. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense. But common sense, I think the big thing is common sense. And you know what I'm seeing, Larry, and we will touch on this. I want to do that at the bottom of the show, I think, so I can calm down before I start ranting. But anyway, one of the things that you have always talked about is personal responsibility. And boy, oh boy, I mean, I'm hopeful that people are starting to take more personal responsibility. You know, they're saying, oh, you know, maybe I did extend myself on my credit cards. I'm not going to walk away. I'm going to make a payment plan, but, you know, I did this. And I'm seeing more and more of that, and, oh, it makes my heart just sing. Are you seeing
more? Well, my heart's not singing
yet.
It might hum every once in a while.
All right.
Because I'm not that confident that it's all coming back. Because while I see it happening in small ways, I also see that our sense of entitlement is going up in bigger ways. You hit the nail on the head when you described what I do. It is all about personal responsibility. I am a one-trick pony. I've taken that one concept and driven it across business and self-help in every way, personal development, including parenting and personal finance and all that. That's what I have, is personal responsibility. I could sum up everything that I do in one sentence: life's your own damn fault. And that's really what it comes down to. Your thoughts, your words, your actions created the life you're living. Once you realize that, you know, I posted on Facebook this week, and I know you follow and comment, and boy, if people want to see a good fight, you're aware. I can start one quick. But my comment was, you are the problem, you are the solution. And once you understand that one simple concept, life becomes much easier for you. But it's our constant battle against that that is the problem.
Right. Well, you know, one thing that I have, and you're right about the entitlements, you and I have had this conversation. I remember distinctly saying this to you before, but look, if I hear the sentence, you know, entitlements, or the word entitlements one more time, I fear for my dental work. I do. You know, I'm terrified I'm going to snap my jaw shut one day and break something. I'm sick to death of the word entitlement programs, or the phrase entitlement programs. There's no such thing. You're entitled to breathe. That's about it. I mean, there are some entitlements, but I shouldn't have to pay for them.
Yeah, and that comes into the personal responsibility versus the entitlement program, and that's where we have big issues right now in our country. You know, all the statistics say that people would love to see Medicare and Social Security reined in, but not their Medicare and Social Security.
Right.
You know, the numbers are staggering. You know, like 70% of people think that, yes, we have to attack those things. And 57% of those 70% say, not mine.
So then
just
what's
not
the answer?
Mine.
Right.
So,
do it down the road.
Yeah, all those programs are terrific to cut back on as long as it doesn't affect me. And that's the selfishness that is built into an entitlement program.
Right.
You know, it's a great idea to rein in the 99-week unemployment thing until you're unemployed, and then you want 199 weeks. So we have to get past that selfishness part that goes along with the entitlement programs, which really just goes back to the one idea of personal responsibility anyway. Everybody take responsibility for their own lives, their own work, their own finances, their own happiness, and we will be much better.
Well, I know I've heard you say that there are ways to rein in your personal finances, and they're not difficult to do. I mean, shutting down some of your
payroll.
It's
all really pretty simple.
It really is, and I would love for you to describe for people who have not heard you speak before, give them some tips, common sense tips, because it really is easy to do. And I don't get why people don't do it, but go, tell us what we
can
do.
Well, you know, it really the same principles apply to every area of life that apply to your finances. I get lots of questions about how do I become successful, because there's a lot of information out there on that, too. And it's really very, very simple, and this works with your finances, your health, or anything. First of all, write down where you are. Most people never do that. Really figure out in black and white exactly where they are with their health, their business, with their relationships, with their money. Write down where you are. Then take another sheet of paper and write down where you want to be. I mean, really, some people call that goal setting. I'm not going to call it that, label that. Just write down where you'd like to be in every single area of your life by comparison to where you are right now. And then write down what you're willing to give up in order to get from where you are to where you want to be. See, the problem right now is we have a mentality that says I need to get more success. Well, you don't get more successful. You give up what's keeping you from being successful. You don't get more financially secure. You give up what's keeping you from being financially secure. You don't get skinny. You give up what's making you fat. You don't get healthy. You give up what's making you unhealthy, which puts us in a different mindset when you think in terms of what am I going to have to give up. That's the problem. People are not willing to give up. They're all about get. What can I get? But when you start saying you get automatically by giving up, that means you've got to impose sacrifice on your life, and people are not willing to sacrifice. So while my approach is the only one I think that makes sense in those areas about how do you become more and all those things by giving up, people don't like that approach because it means that they have to take responsibility and start to sacrifice either the way they think, the way they talk, or the way they act. And that's the problem. In terms of personal finance, figure out where you are, figure out where you want to be, and then figure out what you're going to give up, which means that you have to relook at your lifestyle, how you're spending your money. It's a very simple process, though. Black and white, take a pencil and make it work.
Well, it's interesting that you said the word sacrifice, because while I was listening to you, I wrote that word down, because I'm hearing that a lot. You know, we all need to sacrifice. We need to sacrifice. And I have no issue with that. For me, sacrifice is not a scary word. It just means that I'm readjusting. I don't think a lot of people look at that, though. I think they look at the word sacrifice like, oh, my God, it's going to be taken away from me, and I'll never get it back. And that's just
really
not
more a realignment of priorities.
Exactly.
You know, if being financially secure is important to you, you will realign that as your priority and put more money into that. If looking cute is important to you, then you're going to spend your money at the mall, and which means that is your priority. All I'm talking about is when you realign your priorities, different things become important to you. So the sacrifice that comes along with what my approach here is that you have to sacrifice what was a priority and reestablish what really is a priority. Make your words and your actions in alignment. Right now we talk success, but we practice failure. We talk about how we would like success, but we do everything in the world to make sure it doesn't happen. Just make sure that your actions are in alignment with your words. And the way you do that is to establish priorities, because your time, your energy, and your money always go to what's important to you. Know what's really important to you and prove it to yourself by making sure your actions back it up.
Right. And, you know, I think a lot of people will look at that and say, oh, well, that's easier said than done. Well, you're awake so many hours during the day. How aware are you, however, of what it is that you're doing and the decisions that you're making and the thought processes that are churning through your head? I think at some point you have to just become self-aware enough to say, that was kind of stupid. Maybe I shouldn't do that again.
Well, you know, I tell people that my self-help approach is based on the oldest joke in the book. A guy goes in to the doctor and says, Doctor, it hurts when I do this. And the doctor says, well, then don't do that. And that's sort of that's sort of my approach to fixing your life, is just figure out what hurts and don't do that.
Don't do anything.
You have to do is that self-awareness thing. You have to understand that nothing in your life is neutral. Everything either moves you closer to where you want to be or farther away from where you want to be. And when you understand that, that means everything. Every conversation you have, every book you read, every television show you watch, everything you do all day long, down to what you might think is the most ridiculous small thing, does really move you closer to your goals or it moves you farther away from your goals. And what you, when you start to think in those terms, then it helps you really start to analyze, is this moving me closer or farther away? And it makes you start to realize maybe you need to change what you're doing some to make sure that the actions do move you closer instead of farther away. And that comes from self-awareness.
Right. And I think so many of us, and I have been guilty of this, I still catch myself doing it, but we'll just do what we did the day before because it's kind of become rote. And I'm self-aware now enough that I can look at something and go, now, Denise, you know this is not going to get you where you want to go. But, you know, I can play the devil's advocate, too, so I give myself permission to just mess off sometimes. But I'm aware that I did it. You know, it's not something
Well, that's okay. And sometimes I think we need a little bit of that.
Yeah, you need to go play.
You know, I think it's okay to say, and I used to have a real problem with it, and I still do sometimes, because sometimes I will turn to my wife and say, today's not my day. I'm not in the mood. I've worked hard all week. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out there, put my feet up, watch some stupid television, and turn pages in dumb magazines all afternoon.
Yep.
And I don't beat myself up about it. I give myself a few hours off to do that. And as long as what you're just saying here, as long as you're aware of it, it's okay. There's no downside to giving yourself a few hours to just kind of screw off and do nothing.
As long as that doesn't become the way
that you live your life and run your business.
Right, right. Once it becomes just a meaningless habit and all of a sudden you're, you know, outside in the yard swatting mosquitoes all day and nothing much else, well, you might have gone too far, but you're right. And, you know, and I will do those. Oh, you know, this is not exactly what I had planned for my day, but I'm in kind of a crummy mood, which doesn't happen often, but when it does, continental plate shift. It's time for me to stop what I'm doing. So I go outside. My therapy is yard therapy, and I go out in the yard if it's not too, too hot. And I dig holes, and I move azaleas, and I give away plants, and I go buy new plants, and it's my yard therapy. But I have given myself permission to go do that, and the end result is my yard looks great, and I got some energy, and I didn't yell or
crick
at anybody.
Knowing how to set those limits on it.
Right, right. So you do have to do that, but I think self-awareness is something that I'm hoping people are more aware of now because they might need to be. You know, maybe they're thinking, ooh, okay, I spent my credit card into oblivion. Now they can't take any more charges. I don't have any cash. Maybe I need to do something different. And to do something differently, I need to think differently. And I'm hoping that, you know, I'm seeing more of that. I am. So I'm hopeful. I am.
I'm not singing praises yet, but I might hum a little tune from time to time.
Well, good. Yeah, I like to think that Americans are a resilient bunch, and I'm going to stick with that. So,
okay, if that makes you feel better.
Yeah, I'm trying, Larry. I'm trying. I really am. So tell me what else is you know, the shows that you're going on, what are they talking about? What are the big, big topics right now besides the economy? Because, I mean, you can beat that to death all day long. But are there any other topics that are just really important to talk about right now?
You know, sadly, the most important topic is the economy. There's a lot of other things going on just in the news, but it really all revolves around jobs and unemployment and how to handle it. And of course, that's even the basis of the upcoming presidential election will be the economy. It's always going to come back to that. You know, I did a story yesterday on the news about the fact that for the first time in 10 years, our dependence on foreign oil has gone down below 50%. And a lot of people right now are celebrating the fact that our dependence on foreign oil has finally, after 10 years, dropped. You know, the downside of that is what caused that is that people don't have jobs and they don't drive as much.
That's right.
And you know, we didn't buy as many cars. And so and my point that I made yesterday is, yeah, it's a good news, bad news joke. And there are a lot of those going on right now. It's like saying the good news is you're losing weight. The bad news is you got cancer.
Oh, gosh.
And that's kind of where we are. The good news is that our dependence on foreign oil has gone down, but the bad news is for that to happen, our economy had to go in the toilet.
Right.
And so when you listen to some of these stories that are going right now, realize that, you know, there's a good news, bad news side to all of this stuff. And the bad news is still out there that we have an economy in trouble and, you know, we're probably not taking the right steps to get it back on track. And so what I always remind people is that, and it kind of ties into what I said earlier about watching too much news, is that you have very little control.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what causes the panic. People feel out of control. And you have very little control over, you don't have any control over who's going to win the next presidential election. You have no control over our dependence on foreign oil or whether we're going to drill within the United States and offshore. You have no control over the price of milk or the price of sugar or eggs at the market. The only thing you can control is your own personal economy. And
right.
So when you start to feel powerless and you feel like everyone else is in control of your destiny, that's when you start doing stupid things or you get depressed or you give up or whatever. And what I remind people is to, regardless of what's going on, to step back in and get in control. I think that people right now, even politically, you start to see them respond and react and talk about the government and talk about their party, whichever side they're on, based on a feeling of being out of control, and they want
mm-hmm.
back in. That's fine, and I do believe we ought to be very involved politically in whatever side we're on. But I would like for people to go home and close their doors and look around at their environment and look at their checkbooks and their credit card statements and what's going on in their house and what's going on at their job and how they work and how they interact with their customers and their coworkers and their boss and so forth and say, what about this can I get back in control of? Because when you feel like you're out of control, you're not going to make good decisions, and it is going to affect your emotions, and you're not going to be a pleasant person to be around or to be in business with. So go back home and rein it all in and say, what can I control? And then get in control of those things.
I can't agree with you more. That's really how I tend to live my life. I worry about the things that directly impact me and nothing more. You know, but I did notice a couple of months ago, you know, I'd be watching Fox. I'd, you know, just turn it on when I was cooking dinner. And I would realize that all of a sudden my stomach was starting to hurt. And it was exactly what you're describing. It was just, I was experiencing it, and this went on for a while, and I finally identified what it was. But every time I would turn on the news, I would experience what I can only describe as a low-level sense of dread. And I finally identified it and said, no, I'm not going to do this anymore. These people are not directly impacting me in my daily life, so I'm tuning them out. And I did, and I feel much better. My tums consumption has gone down. I'm not contributing to that part of the economy anymore. So, but, you know, it's just you have to look at what you can directly affect and deal with that.
Yeah, and what you get mad about and what upsets you. And what's going on in the world, we get so mad about it, and we get mad at it. But just really do, just what you said, look back and say, does this really have any impact on my life? And if no, take a deep breath, let it slide this time, which is hard for me. You know, I will admit
you
that's the
both.
Hardest thing in the world for me because I pretty much make my living criticizing the actions of others. I mean, I had a guy write me this week on Facebook and say, why would you even comment about this? Why aren't you the person who just helps people? No, I'm the person who points out the stupid actions of others and exploit those actions of others so you will be reminded not to do that. And
did he understand?
No, he didn't get it. He defriended me and went away, which was fine with me. You know, I'm used to that. You can't have rabid fans without rabid enemies, and I have no problem creating both. So, you know, for me to sit back and say, if it doesn't have an impact on you, let it go, that is one of those things that you have to do as I say, not as I do, because, I mean, that is what I get paid to do,
right.
Is to comment on the actions of others, just to remind us. And if you're going to be involved in, like you said, watch the news and see what people are doing that is so stupid, just use it as a reminder. You know, I used to tell people every once in a while just to turn on Jerry Springer, just to remind yourself how good your life is. And I think that's sometimes what we have to do. About the time you start feeling sorry for yourself or thinking your family's an idiot, turn on Jerry Springer and look at all the families who are really idiots out there.
You know, years ago, I was thumbing through the TV, pushing the buttons, and I really don't watch much TV. And I came across that late at night, and I remember sitting there. I think I went mind numb, but all of a sudden I realized that my throat was dry. And my mouth doesn't normally hang open, but it was, and I couldn't swallow because my jaw had dropped. And I dried my mouth out because I was like, oh, you're kidding me. I never watched it again. It was just too appalling.
Well, you know, that's what people said about my show, Big Spinner on A&E, is that, you know, and I was very clear about this. It helps more people who are watching than it does the people I'm working with on the show.
Right.
Because the people I worked with on the show, most of them never got it. I mean, if your finances are so bad that you're willing to exploit them on national television and have some bald guy in a cowboy shirt scream at you and make you cry, you're beyond help anyway.
I watched that show. I loved it.
But the people who watch the show could at least sit there and go, man, I'm stupid. Man, my finances are wrecked. But they're not that bad. But before they get that bad, maybe I ought to step in and take control. And so really there's a lesson out there in all the stupidity that we see and we observe on TV. So if you're going to watch television and get hooked at all that, at least try to look for the lesson. You know, I tell people, and everybody badmouths Jersey Shore, and I think it's the most disgusting television show on TV. But at least one of the things you can do is judge your parenting skills, because if your kid ends up on Jersey Shore or a show like that, you need to pretty much be assured that you are a lousy parent.
Yeah.
So just use those kind of shows to remind yourself that while life may suck in so many ways, it's not as bad as all those people.
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I'm glad you brought up your show on A&E, because my husband and I did watch that. We watched every, I don't know how many episodes you have, but we watched them all, some of them twice. And I remember telling you this, too, in another conversation that we had. Your show is actually what had me handing over our household finances to my husband. I don't enjoy it. I'm not good at it. I don't enjoy it. It's a chore for me. He's good at it. He loves, you know, playing with numbers. And he looked at me and he said, really? I said, well, Larry said it's okay. And he's like, woohoo! You know?
I said it's okay because it's what I do in my own life. You know, I can go on television and talk about it, but if I had to come home and sit down and try to balance a checkbook, I would shoot myself.
Exactly. I don't like it, none.
I don't like it at all. It's just not my style. I guess I'm sort of a big picture kind of guy or something. So I don't do that stuff either. Luckily, like you, I have a spouse who doesn't mind, and I'm not saying she enjoys it, but at least she doesn't mind and is willing to do it. She's much better at it than I am, so give up that part of the control.
Yeah, I did, and life was much, much easier all the way around, let me tell you, because I'm very talented in a lot of ways. That's not one of them. So,
well, at least you know. You know, Clint Eastwood said a good man knows his limitations.
Right.
And so does a good woman.
And, you know, in your show, there was none of the, I'm going to call them examples, because I think that's what they were. None of them, we were nowhere near any of them, but we didn't want to get there either. So you're right. I learned from watching what other people had done so profoundly wrong, and I decided not to follow in their steps.
That's really the key. And that really is the lesson. And see, that lesson should, we could take that lesson all the way up to our government and our elected officials and our country versus other countries. I mean, we need to look at what we've done wrong. We need to look at our history. We need to look at what's going on around us with other countries and other people and past generations and say, where were the lessons? The problem I see right now, even in the way we parent, is we're not learning from the lessons that we're being shown. And we do that in our own personal lives as well. We don't learn from our lessons. You know, I wrote a book, People Are Idiots and I Can Prove It, where I did a whole chapter on Larry Wingate, Idiot Extraordinaire. I've made more mistakes financially and personally and professionally, in my relationships, you name it. I've made every mistake in the world. The difference is not that I don't make mistakes, it's that I learned a long time ago to learn from those mistakes because I didn't want to repeat them. They hurt, and that's why I believe that you ought to let the consequences of your stupidity hurt just a little bit, and you shouldn't be saved from them. You ought to let it hurt, feel the pain, so you will know, I don't want to do that again.
Right.
And so learn from the mistakes that you make, and people aren't paying attention, and they slide right past zero and go into bankruptcy, and, you know, statistics say if you've been bankrupt once, 50% of you are going to go bankrupt again, simply because
that.
You didn't learn the lesson.
How can you not learn the lesson? I genuinely don't understand. It.
The pain wasn't
traumatic.
Bad enough.
Really? Oh, my gosh. I mean, having to lose your home, your cars, I mean, owe everybody money, that's not bad enough? That's pretty bad.
In bankruptcy, you don't lose your home, and you usually don't lose your
car. Oh, well, then that's what's wrong with bankruptcy. You should lose both of them. You should lose everything and be in a tent.
if it hurt bad enough. And it works that way.
Yes.
You know, people, and I've written about this before in one of my books, where I saw the guy dragging through Costco parking lot, dragging his portable oxygen tank while he was smoking a cigarette. And he got to the door, and he put his cigarette out and dragged his tank inside. Excuse me, you're dragging an oxygen tank because you probably have emphysema, and you got that from smoking too many cigarettes, and now you drag a tank around and you're smoking? You're an idiot, sir.
Yeah.
You're going to explode. Please give this guy room.
Oh, I know. I saw the same thing.
So people don't learn their lessons.
No, I saw a lady come out of a hospital. I was going in to visit my mother. Little woman, probably in her late 70s, she had to have been, drags out her little oxygen thing on the little buggy, whatever you want to call it, sits outside, removes all of the oxygen, smokes her cigarette, and then got locked out because they shut the hospital. It's a little tiny town. It's a little tiny hospital, and they locked her out. And when I went out, I found her and had my cell phone and called them and said, can you come get this lady? She was crying. She wasn't going to give up her cigarette, but she was upset.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you, she was out there the next day. She just went earlier.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah, but that's that is the problem, is that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay to be stupid. I never put anybody down for doing something stupid. I really don't. I put you down for doing something stupid for the 15th time.
Yeah.
At some point, you need to have learned that this is stupid behavior. Stop doing it. Everybody gets to make one mistake, sometimes two or three. But come on.
I know. Well, I think we're in a gimme now society. Everybody wants what they want. They want it now. There's instant gratification. I mean, you can drive down the road, look to the left, look to the right at any drive-through window, McDonald's, Popeyes, Burger King, whatever it is. It doesn't matter what time of the day it is. There's lines. I mean, why do people need to eat all day long? I don't get that.
Yeah.
You know,
look at the average size of those people.
Oh, gosh, I know. And look at their pocketbooks. I mean, you're spending a ton of money going through those drive-through windows or getting your cappuccino. And look, y'all, I'm not saying you shouldn't do these things. I'm just saying, as I'm observing, going, well, yeah, you're broke. Look what you're doing. I mean, you're eating all the time. You're driving around. You're guzzling gas. I mean, these are things where you could maybe kind of rein it in and save a little bit of money, lose a little bit of weight, and feel better about it.
Well, that goes back
to
one, personal responsibility, but also controlling what you can control, and you can control that. And I have people who write me nasty, nasty letters when I get off on this topic that we're on right now, saying, Larry, you don't understand. I can eat on the dollar menu cheaper than I can feed my family. And I always say, that's bull crap, sweetheart. That is not true. Yeah, you can put stuff in their stomachs, but that's not called eating.
No. And it's not nutrition. It's not.
It's just stuff in their stomachs.
That's right. And here's another thing, and this is another topic that we may or may not get in trouble for, but, you know, insurance. Everybody's worried about insurance. Can they afford it? Will they get it? Is Obamacare going to kick in? Is it going to be overridden? Insurance. Why not take personal responsibility and eat some healthy nutrition as opposed to eating off the dollar menu all day long? Not breakfast, not dinner, not lunch, but, you know, 2 in the afternoon.
You're talking about making a preemptive strike against health care? Come on, Denise. You
know
that doesn't make any sense. Why head it off the pass when there's going to be someone there to rescue you?
I'm so sorry. Forgive me. I don't know what I was thinking.
No, see, you're getting into that common sense thing again, and that just offends people. Don't go there. People don't want that.
I was accused on Facebook of having gasped too much common sense yesterday because of this. Oh, gosh, and I know you saw this story. A New York school district wants to now train unwed mothers on how to properly dispose of their babies, how to properly abandon their babies. And, my thinking is, well, why not teach them how not to have the babies to start with if they're unwed and they're teenagers? But
exactly, preemptive strike.
I was accused of having just too much common sense. It was all tongue-in-cheek. It was all very funny, but, oh, my gosh. That started a little bit of a firestorm all by itself.
Oh, good for you. That means you're done.
Well, I have something to say, and I say it. And if you don't like it, unfriend me. I'm good. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't either. And I told a friend of mine the other day who's kind of in this industry, I said, if the first thing that crosses your mind when you want to say something or you have an opinion is I'm going to lose Facebook friends and fans, if that's what's crossing your mind, you've given up your integrity and your sense of self-worth. You've given it up. Because now you're more concerned about the opinions of a bunch of idiots on Facebook than you are about your own opinion. And so don't get to that point.
Well, one thing that I have learned from you and learned it well, because honestly, when you told me the title of this book, you made me understand what my lifelong philosophy about life has been. And that's the book that started you on this path, and I'd love for you to share that story.
Shut up, stop whining, and get a life?
No. What you think of me is really none of my business.
Oh, really? That book was an inspiration. I wish I'd written that book. But
that
book was a true inspiration to me. What you think of me is none of my business. And it's a hard thing to reach that point in your life. But when you do, it's a very freeing experience. I spent a lot of years in the personal development industry being what everybody else wanted me to be. I could give their speech. I could come in and fluff them up and make them feel wonderful about who they were and tell them if they just felt good about what was going on, life would be amazing. And people paid me well to do that because I was good at it. I understand this is a job. And if that's what they wanted, I could give it to them. But the thing is, it just made me miserable. I just got to the point I hated myself and hated the audiences and hated my wife and hated my staff and I hated everything. And it was mostly based on the fact that I was very inauthentic. And so when I decided through a long series of events and midlife crisis and all those things to become authentic and be who I really was, just the title alone, what you think of me is none of my business, that was a big inspiration to me and a big help because I had to get past the approval of other people and be willing to self-approve. If you can go to bed at night approving of who you were for the day, you've had a good day, regardless of what other people think of you. And you have to get that point in order to be successful. I was very fortunate. People responded well to the authentic Larry Wingate, better than they had to the inauthentic Larry Wingate.
Right.
And that career, that was a real career boost for me. But I just know a lot of people in the business, and I know them on stage, I know them off stage, I know them when they write the books, I know them when they're not writing the books. And there is a huge lack of authenticity going on in this industry as well as every other industry.
Right. Well, and that's just it, and that goes back to what we were talking about earlier. If you are your authentic self, people respond to that. They really do. And if you're trying to do something, out of panic, out of numbers, oh, gosh, I can get 100 clients on Wednesday, and they're going to pay me $97. Oh, gosh, I'm going to go buy a boat because I just made a bunch of money in my mind, and I've seen people do this all the time.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're not working from a place of true, authentic self, give it up. Don't spend money on that course. Don't go get a business license. You're done. It's not going to. It may work for a while, but you'll be on the Tums train after that.
Yeah. I've discovered people really don't pay much attention to what you have to say. Most people don't even believe what you have to say. But they always pay attention to see if you believe what you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really
action.
The key. You have to be authentic, believe what you have to say. Because that's what people will not only pay attention to and are attracted to, whether they agree with it or not. I mean, I have people who disagree with me, but they are still fans of mine because at least I made them think and because they know that's who I really am. I am compromised. in terms of what I have to say. And if it makes you mad, like you said about what you write, if it makes you mad, fine. That's going to have to be your problem, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
And people do admire that sense of authenticity, whether they agree with it or not. The trouble is we're trying to make ourselves easy to agree with, easy to like. I have a friend who says, I just believe if I can make enough people like me that I'll get hired and I'll be busy and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? I kind of believe that the more people dislike me, the more I get hired. You know, really, I've had 3 death threats in the last year, you know, and sort of I judge success by that.
Oh, my God. Are they valid death threats or just people spatting off?
A little bit of both, but, yeah, they have some validity.
Ooh.
You know, somehow people are so challenged by the fact that I say that you ought to have a work ethic, you ought to be honest, you ought to live a life of integrity. When you have kids, you actually ought to love them enough to parent them, which means impose consequences and train them and teach them and all of those things, and that you ought to spend less money than you make. And for that, there are some people in the world who think I ought to die because of that.
Oh, my gosh. See, that makes no sense to me at all. I can't even... The psychology behind that is just so foreign to me that I can't even go down that road and try to figure it out. Yeah,
well,
if you have an opinion, it's yours. Keep it. Yeah, it's just, I'm like you. It's none of anybody's. I don't really care. And I don't mean this to sound rude or uncaring or unfeeling. I learned at a very, very young age that I really didn't care what other people thought because I recognized when I was about 5-6 years old that I couldn't control what they thought. I only knew what I thought. And I also knew that my thoughts were changeable. And what I thought, you know, right now, 5 minutes down the road, I might have a different perspective on the same exact thing that I was stomping around about earlier. So, you know, you only control who you are, nobody else. And I wish people would understand that.
I've even taken that, Denise, to another level, is that I just really don't care at all.
Yeah, right.
And people ask, you know, I learned the first president of the National Speakers Association said a line so many years ago when I first got in the industry, really made a difference to me. It says, you are responsible to your audience, you are not responsible for your audience. And I said, that is exactly right. I'm responsible when I get hired or write a book or go on a stage or on a television show. I'm responsible to be the best version of me I can possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
I am not responsible for what they do with it. So I even in my speeches now stand on stage and say, I don't care who you are, what you're going through. I don't care what your business. I don't care about you people. I don't. And that is so foreign to them because these people stand on stage and say, I care so much about what you're successful. I don't. I care whether I'm successful. Whether you're successful is up to you. I can't become involved in whether you do any of these things I'm talking about or not. My responsibility is to give you the tools that I've discovered work for me, and that's all I do. I've written 5 bestsellers telling people what worked for me. So I'm responsible to tell you what worked for me. You're responsible to make it work for you. I'm not. So I'm not going to take the credit, and I'm not going to take the blame. If your life changes, don't write me a letter and say, Larry, you changed my life. No, I didn't. You did it. Congratulations.
Right. Exactly.
But if it doesn't work out, don't write me a letter and say, you were an idiot, it didn't work. I don't care about that either.
Well, all you can do is the best you can do, and you're there to provide information, and that's it. It's like when you're in school. The teacher's standing up there, they're giving you information. Now it's your job to go do something with that information.
Yep.
Or figure out what in the heck the teacher said to start with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we are all sentient beings. We have to do our own thinking. And I really genuinely think that has become a problem in our modern society. We don't tend to do our own self-reflection and our own thinking to an alarming degree, and it's causing problems all the way across the board. That's just my observation. Do I know this to be true? No, but it's what I think.
Well, I'm way past just thinking that. I absolutely am convinced that's the way it is. I really am. I think that people judge their self-worth based on how others feel about them rather than how they feel about themselves. And we see the shallowness exhibited on television shows and the shallowness of our society that you have to be a certain way to gain the approval of others. We've lost our identity, our willingness to be individuals so we can fit into the pack, which just drives us all to a level of mediocrity. So nobody will stand out too much. Yet it's the people mm-hmm. who stand out throughout history, the people who stand out in every single area of society, whether it be, Lady Gaga does not fit in the middle of the pack. And the reason she's so successful is because she's so extreme. But when you watch a show like some American Idol or The Voice or some of those, all those people sound exactly like everybody else. You could close your eyes. That's why I liked that show, The Voice, because it was a blind audition. You close your eyes and all those people sound just the same to me.
Really?
I see them. I'm on the road a lot. I see a lot of shows, and I got a comment about this stuff probably tomorrow on TV. Somebody will ask me some questions, so I have that level of awareness that I'm sometimes ashamed of. But we drive in the music industry things toward the middle. You know, if there's a book, a courtroom drama that becomes successful, like a John Grisham was a huge success, and all of a sudden we see 25 other authors writing similar books. If one fashion trend becomes popular, everybody wants that, and then it's no longer a fashion trend because now everybody's got it. And then when you look in politics, it's the people that have stood out. When you look at history, I don't care whether it was Jesus or Hitler, it was people on the outside, mm-hmm. on the fringe, who really we remember the most and who stood out most, whether it was for a good reason or a bad reason. It's not the people in the middle, the mediocre. It's not the masses who got remembered. It was the individuals. And while we tell people, be yourself, be an individual, we don't reward them for that.
No, true enough. Especially in school, sit down, behave, don't talk. Yep. What kind of lesson is that? I spent a lot of time in the principal's office when I was in school, trust me.
Oh, believe me, I did too. When I went to fourth grade, Mrs. Bowman, I'll never forget, my fourth grade teacher automatically said, Larry, there's your chair. Your desk is in the corner. And this is on the first day of school.
Ow.
And I said, why? I just got here. And she said, your reputation precedes you. That's where you will sit this year. And so I sat in the corner all year. It was fine with me, and I probably deserved it. And it made my mother mad, but my dad said, come on. It's Larry. He talks all the time. That's the best place for him. So, I spent a lot of time. What's funny to me is everything I ever got in trouble for is now what I get paid to do.
I know. Isn't that interesting? That's just the way life works out if you are authentic and you do what you really feel you need to do. Short of murdering people, you don't want to do that. But, don't do that. We're not giving
you anything. And what's sad is you had to qualify that statement.
I did.
And we have reached the point where if you don't qualify everything, there's some bozo in the audience that's going to say, well, does that mean you get to kill people?
I know. And I fell into it. Oh, my gosh. Shame on me. I'm not turning that TV on for another 6 months. I can't take it anymore. Just can't. But, you know what? We never did get to talk about customer service, so I would love for you to come back, and I'll tell you my tale of woe.
Oh, my goodness, the time is up. Look at that.
I appreciate you
having me on. We talked about a lot of good things today. I love the show. But I'm always happy to come back and talk about customer service.
I would love for you to, because I have had a month-long, I'm not going to call it a saga. You see I'm speechless? I'm so mad. But Cox Communications and AT&T are on my hit list right now. I am so angry with both of them. And, I'm trying to be calm. I'm trying to be patient. I haven't had dependable phone service for a month now. It's really annoying. And these two giant companies can't seem to pull it together. We're going to talk it. And it's the customer service part of it that's got me just fuming. I'll call and I'll ask for a supervisor. Well, why? It's none of your business why. I just want to speak to a supervisor. Well, I can help you. No, clearly you can't. And it's just...
Well, what I tell everybody when it comes to customer service is remember, everybody's got a boss. And just keep going until you find a boss that can resolve your problems.
I never hesitate,
just like you pointed out, to ask for a supervisor. And everybody's got one.
Oh, I know. Well, one girl had the nerve, and I remember thinking, you've got to be kidding. She said, well, what do you mean supervisor? And I quietly said, your supervisor is the person that when you need personal leave, do you go talk with that person and ask for personal leave? Yeah. Well, when you need to file for your vacation time, who do you speak to? My supervisor. I said, that's the person I want to speak with. I had to point out who the supervisor was. Really, you don't know who you're trying to identify here? It's been, we're going to talk about that at length one time soon.
All right, I'd love to. Have me back on. I'd love to.
I would love to. I will give you a call after we get off. But, Larry, thank you so much for being here with me. I love having you on here. I hope you have a fabulous Memorial weekend. What are your plans?
Hey, thank you so much.
You have plans, or are you staying home?
No, actually, I'm flying out Memorial Day morning to Miami, Florida, to do a speech on Tuesday. So I'm working.
Oh, my goodness. You're, me too. I had several people say, are you working? Well, yeah, but it's not work. I love what I do. But anyway, thank you, everybody, for being with us here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and Larry Wingett wishing you a happy and a safe Memorial Day weekend. Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
Bye.